This show was brought to you by Ouch My Ego, ouchmyego.com.
And we're back with Rob. It's been a minute,
hasn't it?
Yeah. Like one single minute, which equals like a bunch.
A year.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe.
What did we last watch?
I don't remember.
Forbidden Zone.
Was that what it is?
Yeah.
Everything you watched with me is musical, it seems.
Forbidden Zone, yeah.
I actually like that because you're the musician that I know. I know a bunch of other musicians, but you're the musician, right? It's the thing that you do, and it's like all-encompassing of your brain.
Yeah, I can't think of things away from that, I guess.
So, I've been trying to get you to watch this one with me, and, well, what did we just watch?
We just watched True Stories.
Hi, my name's David Byrne, and I made a movie about a bunch of people in Virgil, Texas. They're getting ready for the 150th anniversary of their state. They're calling it a celebration of specialness.
Something's happening here, all right. The world is changing.
It's created confusion and chaos.
Do you run out of Kleenex, paper towels, and toilet paper at the same time?
What time is it?
No time to look back.
I want someone to share my life. Marriage is a natural thing, and I'm a natural man. I love the women. Hey, there's more to life than this job.
Hello, I'm Lewis Fine, and I'm looking for matrimony with a capital M.
Yep. It's fancy driving, all right.
Not only driving, but parking.
Bunch of maniacs out there. You know how hot dogs come 10 to a pack and buns in packs of 8 or 12? You gotta buy 9 packs to make them all match up. That's what I'm talking about.
But this place is completely normal, anyway.
Directed by David Byrne, John Goodman, who I like a lot. Especially in that role, too. I really like
Yeah.
His role, like, he's endearing.
He's sweet.
And he looks great in those suits.
Swoozy Kurtz, you were.
Yeah, Swoozy Kurtz, who I know I've seen her in a lot of stuff. And I know that name because how could you not remember Swoozy?
Right.
From the 80s. It's like little parts in a bunch of movies that I couldn't name off the top of my head. If you could help me out with that.
Like Slapshot. A lot of little things that neither of you would know. A World According to Garp, perhaps. We might know her from Wildcats. Vice Versa. She was in Vice Versa.
Which one was Vice Versa?
Vice Versa, 1988.
I know that's a switching movie.
That's the Judge Reinhold one.
Oh,
with Fred Savage.
With the skull. Yeah, that's okay.
Bright Lights, Big City, Dangerous Liaison.
I saw Vice Versa a lot on HBO when it came out.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've seen her plenty. Reality Bites she's in and further. Well, what is this movie about? You tell me right now.
This movie's about Texas.
It is about Texas.
It is about Texas. It almost seems like an alien coming down to, which is what David Byrne kind of is.
Yes.
He's from the Northeast.
Yes.
He's very much from that art school kind of
world. He's an alien.
Yeah, and he is an alien coming into Texas and kind of documenting in not even, some of it is very obvious. It's not like a documentary where the person is trying to keep a distance. It's almost like he's enjoying participating in
sure.
And wandering around and looking around and commenting.
But you have stuff now that does this all the time, and they do it in a way that makes fun of whatever it's talking about.
Yes.
This is not doing that.
No, this isn't making fun of, but it's also not putting it on a pedestal. It's just like an alien. It's not making a judgment. It's like, here's all this weird shit they do. I'm not even saying it's weird.
Yeah.
You're gonna see how weird it is because
wherever the natural humor is
yes.
where you're gonna laugh, and it's gonna be something that I might not laugh at, you're gonna laugh at, or vice versa.
Yeah.
But the humor is there.
Yeah.
Regardless, but it's not at all mean-spirited. It's never been mean-spirited. I'm thinking of like Comedy Central where they embed a guy in some sort of silly protest and then they just make fun of the protesters to their faces.
Yeah, it's not like Triumph going to something and to make fun of it.
Maybe not even Triumph. That's like way the harder line.
Yeah.
I'm saying like the guy who's got the tone that he's just trying to convince the person he's interviewing just enough that he's legitimate, but he really is being cleverly sarcastic and snide.
Oh, more like Daily Show type of stuff.
That's what I'm thinking.
Like embedding someone in something and kind of showing the people outside how dumb these people are.
Right.
But they're not even in on the joke.
Right. Now, David Byrne doesn't approach it this way. And this isn't a documentary, but it's set up like it is a documentary.
Yeah.
He seems, I think, really enamored with everything. Like,
yeah.
Like he's completely interested in everything that's going on. To quote him, he said, "It's a project with songs based on true stories from tabloid newspapers. It's like 60 minutes on acid."
Hmm.
The acid part, not so much, but no. I get what he's trying to say. I mean,
Well, to somebody coming outside, you would say this is like it is on acid.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If he's just talking to Midwestern American people.
Yeah, they'd be like, this is normal.
Yeah.
What's on acid is your crazy videos and your, you know, all that other stuff. Yeah.
So he had a conversation with Stephen Tobolowsky.
Ned Ryerson! Needle Nose Ned, Ned the Head. Come on, buddy. Am I right or am I right or am I right?
And so Stephen Tobolowsky is the co-writer.
Yeah.
And Beth Henley is also a co-writer. He and Beth wrote the script based on a wall of drawings that David Byrne did based on tabloid stories that he read.
Mm-hmm.
So he had like hundreds of pictures, and David Byrne had them over, and he was like, look at this stuff. So they were inspired by this, and they wrote the sesquicentennial Texas thing into their script, and they had this big long script, or I don't know how long it was, and they had lots of stuff in there that was inspired by, and David Byrne got the script, and then they hadn't heard from him for about a year. And when he returned, he kept elements of their stuff, but he basically rewrote the entire script. But he kept the sesquicentennial stuff, he kept various other elements. But he added their name and he asked them, can I please have your names before mine so that it's not a vanity project? Even though it is. It is a vanity project, but it's one of the best vanity projects I've ever seen.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with that.
Vanity? Yeah, like what other vanity projects are there? There's like Madonna's...
Purple Rain is a vanity project.
Purple Rain, okay, that might be a good one. But Madonna's erotica.
Oh, like the book?
Sex book thing is a vanity project that's just like, eye-rolling, you know?
Anytime a musician does anything, like Kanye West's clothing line is a vanity project.
Also extremely eye-rolling. Here's a very thin white t-shirt for
$500
or something. Come on.
Well, a vanity project is something that you do outside of what you're good at?
But David Byrne is pretty good at this.
But no, that's why. I wouldn't call this... vanity projects usually come with the tag that it's bad, right?
Right.
If somebody does something well, you can't call it a vanity project. It's just another thing they did well.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Like you would say, I don't know, I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Because we don't like to think about bad things. Right?
Well, how about this? Didn't the dude from My Chemical Romance start writing comics
for
Broadway?
Yeah,
they actually ended up being pretty good.
Yeah, so
not
I've
terrible.
Heard. I haven't really looked
so at I wouldn't call those vanity projects. Those are just other things he did that maybe he found something that he was actually good at. Because I don't think
right,
it's
no,
that
because
good.
Because he's letting the writing and all that stuff be the thing, and the art and all that stuff be the thing, as opposed to his name being
exactly.
The so Rob Zombie making movies. Horror movies isn't exactly a vanity project, but the second he puts himself in it,
it would be a vanity project.
Yeah.
So I think vanity project is it has your name on it and it shouldn't. Whereas, like, I think David Byrne taking away his name made it not a vanity
He didn't
project.
Take it away, but not, he put it third.
Yeah.
He put it as far as writing.
It wasn't David
it
Byrne's.
Yeah. It was his main idea. So true story character types. There's the man who can't find love.
Hi, my name is Lewis. Lewis Fine.
Yeah.
Ever. There's the civic leader who never speaks directly to his wife.
Yeah.
Linda, would you ask your mother to pass the mustard to our guest, please?
That's by Spalding Gray.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who Spalding Gray is? Have you ever seen him?
I know that name has come up. Is he...
Swimming to Cambodia is one of his major... He's a monologist.
Yeah.
He does monologues. What is that? Monologist? Monologist?
Voiceover?
No. It's a play thing.
Oh, okay.
He does a one-man shows. He's a monologist. Monologist? Okay. I don't know how to say it.
Yeah, that sounds like he...
And they're amazing. He's an incredible storyteller. And a few years back, he suffered deeply from depression and committed suicide. And he went missing for a long time. And then they found his body in, I think, the Hudson.
Well, it speaks a lot to, like, always being alone, always doing...
Yeah, quite possibly.
Yeah.
But, because I had seen this movie so many times, but I thought before that his scenes were a bit more resonant than they were this time watching it.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't really come out until halfway into the film.
And I remember them being a bit more dynamic, like the conspiracy theorist preacher.
Now let's look at who's been running this country since World War II.
Yeah.
It also still speaks true to right now, the conspiracy theory stuff.
They have members on the boards of all the largest corporations.
Yeah, but it was not overtly racist intro stories, and now I feel like conspiracy is just a vehicle to say, well, a lot of it is the same thing with John Birch Society.
Yeah.
You know, John Birch Society put out flyers calling JFK a traitor to his country, wanted for treason, you know, putting a bounty on his head. And
wow.
That's that. You can look that up. That's real. It's not a... that far different from people saying Obama's a traitor, blah, 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 yeah, yeah. Stuff. But I mean, if you look at JFK, like this beloved figure now, which they kind of do mention.
Texas is still paying for John Kennedy's death, my friends.
Yeah, they're still living it down.
Yeah.
As far as 1986 goes, they were still living down that.
Yeah. But if you look at Texas, this is the type of place that loves the type of person who kills a president, you know? For all the sweetness that David Byrne finds in Texas, like, we have some of the best stuff, but also some of the worst.
I think the conspiracy moment. Yeah. I think that conspiracy moment was very kind of clever.
Well, a lot of it isn't even conspiracy, because he talks about people who have been in power since World War II, and you could look at people like Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, have been around since, like, the Nixon era in prominent positions.
Yeah.
And, like, that's not even conspiracy. It's just out there.
Yeah, it's just out there. As far as the folks who read the news and stuff, they don't read beyond the news. They read just what's in the news.
Yeah.
And so they don't see the connected dots, these people being shuffled from position to position,
because
to power to power and all that stuff.
Yeah, news ignores larger context.
So that's where the concept of conspiracy theory comes. It's not necessarily theory anymore. It's just true for a lot of it. And some of it isn't true.
Well, I think conspiracy theories are at least entertaining. Yeah. Whereas true conspiracies that actually exist are so boring and rote that they're looked over because they're not entertaining.
Right, right, right.
That's kind of what a lot of modern politics is like. What's more entertaining that equals more relevant or has more of an impact?
Yeah. The Spalding Gray scenes, he's just talking about commerce and stuff. And
yeah, he's talking
business.
About the shifting of intellectual work away from corporations to people who make their own businesses, make their own inventions. But he's talking about the need to keep them in the town, at least, if they're not working for the corporation, which is kind of...
Yeah, keep them in the
prescient
town.
To so, what's happening now in the country, you know.
Yeah. So grow the economy locally with cool businesses and so on. Yeah, it's actually interesting stuff. Always,
and this was 30 years ago from now.
Yeah, I always thought that it was more resonant than it was. Resonant as in like dynamic and how we presented it. Instead of, didn't have as much panache as my memory serves. Whatever. Maybe certain things speak to me at certain times.
And also because he makes it vague enough. It never says a specific thing. It's going to be open to more interpretation. Things that are not very upfront are going to be easily interpreted in later time periods.
Now, Swoozy Kurtz, her character, will not get out of bed.
Ooh, can you believe that?
She's the lazy woman. That's her character's name.
It's not that she's lazy.
That's the character name, though.
Yeah. She can afford not to is the reason we're given.
And she has not quite a servant, but a helper guy who's played by Pop Staples.
Yeah, he's not a servant because he gets the weekends off. Remember, he's like, I'll see you Monday.
Right. He's a voodoo man.
You don't have to believe. If you follow direction, you can't go wrong.
And he helps John Goodman's character find love.
Yeah.
I don't really understand his voodoo thing. Take all the metal out of your pockets, put it in a baggie, and he puts a watch in his hand or something.
Yeah, you know, he gives him like
a harmonica.
It looks like a badge.
It is a badge. You're right.
It's a token.
Because they show it later again, but the first time I couldn't quite see what it was.
Yeah. I mean, that's just called fetishism. You give one item power. Well, that's what I was saying. If this movie was like a little bit more true to Texas, and it really is, but if it was a little bit more true, it would have been more of like a curandera or like a woman, an old Mexican woman. There's a lot of kind of rural medicine, folk medicine traditions, especially more in like central South Texas, which I feel like some of the movie takes
place.
It's in this weird...
Well, yeah, it's in a fake place called Virgil,
like
Texas.
Springfield,
it's
Texas.
It's been made up. Yeah. It's not real Texas, but I do think what you're saying, he's pulling from all corners of Texas.
Yeah, the presence of like Mexicans...
feels more Southern.
Feels more Southern to me, because maybe like San Antonio down.
Yeah, but it was shot around
Denton.
Dallas and Denton.
Yeah.
And so, in suburbs of Dallas.
There are pockets of that in outside of Dallas, actually.
Now, when I moved here to South Texas, I have another podcast, and we were doing road movies.
Mm-hmm.
Just since it's a theme, we're going to be on this big road trip, let's do road movies. And then we ended up breaking it into four episodes about bunch of different type of road movies, adventure road movies, science fiction or post-apocalypse or quirky comedies. And this one fell into quirky comedies. Now, this isn't exactly a road movie, but he's in his car a lot.
Yeah, no, it kind of is.
And he's driving along, but I feel like it's like a travelogue.
Yes.
So I used it in that sense of like justifying that it was a road movie. But this is the image of Texas that I had before moving here. And this is not the Texas that I got.
Well, how close?
Texas is a freaking
road state.
Like, yeah, but it is that, so, and it isn't that. Yeah. It just depends on where you are.
Yeah, I can take you to that bar scene, the Mexican bar scene, like down the street from here. But if you want some of the other stuff, you'd have to go to North Texas.
But in a general sense, how it looks, the main street, how that looked with the buildings on little town thing that we don't seem to have down here.
You can drive through those on the way here, like on the way to Houston. I drove through a bunch recently.
Right, but not in McAllen.
Oh, no.
Right, which was mentioned in this movie.
Yeah, yeah, they mentioned...
Who was that?
Esteban Jordan, or Steve Jordan. He's kind of a mythical figure. He's actually from the Rio Grande Valley down here. He was born in Elsa, which is about 20 minutes away from here. That's one of those really tiny towns that you just drive by. It's not even off the expressway. He's known as the Jimi Hendrix
of accordion.
But I mean, he's done some crazy stuff. He was putting like guitar pedals on his accordion. You can find performances where he's running it with like a flanger,
wow,
crazy reverb stuff.
Well, I mean, if you're gonna be doing that for as long as he did,
yeah,
he did it for as long. You're just gonna be like, well, what can I do now with an accordion? Yeah. Wait, technology does what? Okay, let's plug that into my accordion.
Yeah,
what does it do?
Experimenting with noise, what the instrument can do, and not just kind of technical mastery for the sake of it.
So he does a song that just references a lot of South Texas.
Yeah, he mentions like, I think, San Antonio, Laredo, and McAllen.
And Reynosa,
yeah.
Over the border. So Tito Yavara is in here, and he plays this guy, Ramon.
Baby, I'm the only one that has a radio.
Who can pick up vibes from people. And basically, he just tells them they're going to be okay.
Yeah.
But he says that he has, like, telepathic powers. But he grabs a person's nose and holds the back of their head, and he just waddles it a little bit, and then he's like, you're going to be okay. Yeah. You're good. Now, Stephen Tobolowsky said that during college, back when he was younger, he had this sort of ability where he could read tones from people similarly. So David Byrne wrote that into the script. That wasn't a... Stephen Tobolowsky just told him an anecdote.
Yeah.
And it got worked into the script. So... Oh, we are almost done with the characters, but the last one is the lying woman.
Oh, yeah, the pathological liar.
Yeah, she's just constantly lying about everything.
Lying about Burt Reynolds falling in love with her, writing songs for Elvis. There's so many that those are the ones I can remember off the top of my head.
Well, we were first introduced to her bragging about Burt Reynolds.
Yeah.
Remember when I went out with Burt Reynolds? Shoot, he was gonna quit the movies and come live with me.
So that's why that one sticks into your head. It's the most memorable one. He would have given his fortune to her, but she never says why.
Yeah, I know.
So, yeah, she always pops up bragging at various points.
Well, and then she tells the Elvis lie because she's talking to John Goodman on the date.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, John Goodman's constantly trying to get a woman, not in a...
He's trying to find a wife.
Yeah, trying to find a wife. He even puts this forth.
Yeah.
Hello. I'm Louis Fine, and I'm looking for matrimony with a capital M. I'm looking for someone who can accept me for what I am. I'm 6'3" tall and maintain a very consistent panda bear shape. Won't you please call this number? 844-WIFE. That's 844-WIFE. Please call. Serious inquiries only.
And so that's his whole point. That's his goal. And he's very sincere, and he's very... cuddly, and
yeah, but
he's just adorable.
Yeah, he's against promiscuity. He's like, I ain't a swinger. And he's like, yeah, just want to swing.
He keeps on pushing the no swinging.
Yeah, he wants stability.
And he's also a bit of an amateur musician or singer. That's a pretty fun scene.
In 1950, when I was born.
Yeah, no, he's great. I like his singing. It's got his...
It's actually his voice.
Yeah, that was like...
And that he's not a singer, but yes. he when non-singers can sing, it's pretty impressive.
And you can hear their voice in their singing voice, which you don't think of with normal singers because you meet them as singers or you're introduced to them as singers.
Right.
But like when you hear John Goodman singing, you're like, oh, that's John Goodman's voice in that performance.
Much of this film is music-based.
Yes.
Now, first thing I had was the score, and I had it on vinyl, and it got warped because Southern California.
Yeah.
It was in the window seat, and I think I also had a record player up there, but I wasn't thinking. I was dumb and young, but I had this and I...
Window pulled, seat of what?
A window seat in my room.
Oh, you just had it facing the sun.
Well, not the... No, the, I had it actually against the wall.
Oh, okay.
I had
but
it,
the sun would still hit
but
it.
But the sun would still hit it. So I pull it out one day and it's just this rippled, warped...
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? No! So, yeah. I was trying to remember why I don't have that anymore, and I finally did remember, and yeah. I can't really kick myself too much over it, but because it was just the incidental music, it wasn't the...
Well, even that stuff was good.
I know.
I'd kind of want to hear that now. I've never come across that. That's kind of odd that I've never come across that in all my years of looking through record bins.
Yeah, it's got him on the cover. Really, I think what they did is they had him jump on a trampoline holding a newspaper.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's him... looking like he's floating in the air on a white backdrop holding a newspaper that has all the true stories on it, and he's got his cowboy hat and looking down at it. And I had that, I don't know if I had that first or second. I saw the movie on Bravo.
Mm-hmm.
Bravo at the time, it was the early 90s, at least 1990. So that was actually, if it was 1990, that was actually still quite soon after it came out in the theater. 1986 is when this was released.
Yeah.
That's kind of impressive that Bravo would have it that soon. So I was transfixed when I first saw it, and I was just like, what is this? This is funny. But it's, and now I laugh out loud a lot more than I did when I watched it then. But this is funny, and I don't know exactly why it's funny. The way he talks, definitely the way he's driving in that one scene where it's
The fake driving.
He's steering wheel is like moving all around. It's my favorite visual gag in the film. There's even a subtle fart joke in the movie.
Yeah.
It, which is kind of a non-joke. It's just the question, did you fart? And it's kind of funny, and it doesn't really have a place, but it works.
Yeah, it's placed after, like, kind of a...
just a sigh.
Yeah, a serious... not even a serious moment, just like a...
a
weird,
tender
like,
moment a tender between moment. Two people walking in a field, talking about how much they love each other. And then the guy sighs, and she says, did you fart? Yeah, it's a chuckler. But the movie would be shown over and over because they didn't have a lot of programming. So they would show it every month at least. And so I would just see it every month.
Oh, so you saw it like over and over.
I saw this movie so many times. I love it. And then I got the DVD, which is the only release of it. And it's that old Warner Brothers DVD, which is paper, and it has that plastic flap at the beginning.
Yeah.
They're the most awkward
cases.
Yeah,
like all those old Kubrick ones and that clasp. Yeah,
so that, and it's full screen, which I think it's actually open mat. By the end of the movie, the credits go into a sort of a widescreen, but there's no information that you're losing during the credits. But the main part of the film is, I've always ever seen it full screen. I want to see it widescreen, even if it just chops the top and bottom off.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I've always been involved with this film. And I haven't seen it in a very long time, because what ends up happening with my favorite movies is... I stop watching them because they're my favorites. Diminishing returns.
Yeah.
I want them to keep returning to me when I watch them. So this one did again. I really enjoy it still. So what do you think though? Do you really like this movie? Is this a strange movie to you?
No, it's I enjoyed like every minute I was watching it. I couldn't see it becoming one of my favorites. I really like Talking Heads. I like what David Byrne does. I read his book, How Music Works. I think it's a good book. I like David Byrne's kind of thinking and his whole aesthetic. Like, he always kind of places rules on himself of what he can't do in a project. I mean, even Talking Heads, I remember reading in his book, he said that their sound was shaped by the rules that they gave themselves of what they couldn't do. No guitar solos. He gave himself a personal rule.
I never noticed that.
Yeah, he gave himself a personal
rule. I love that.
Yeah, and it makes...
I love no guitar solos.
It makes the songs cleaner.
Like, They Might Be Giants does guitar solos sometimes, and their guitar solos are crazy and nutty, and they're fun, and I can hang with that.
But they don't throw one in every song.
No. Yeah. And for lack of a better term, guitar solos just seems like masturbation to me.
Yeah, they are.
So no guitar. I never noticed it. And the reason why I never noticed it is because it's so streamlined and the songs are perfect that way.
Well, I mean, you could argue that a lot of Remain in Light has guitar solos, like with Adrian Belew doing the weirder stuff. But that's never like a traditional guitar solo, like verse, chorus, guitar solo, chorus. It's
right,
more of
okay.
like things just planted in the song.
Noodles.
Yeah. Yeah, like they're not meant to be traditional guitar solos.
And by that time, weren't they established?
Yeah, they were already.
They were like, the rule this time that is, was their fourth album. But we can't do it that way. We have to do it this way.
Exactly. So. But anyway, yeah, and then he had his own personal rule that he would never try to sing like a black person.
Okay.
So a lot of that singing is outsourced to actual black people, like on, again, Remain in Light and stuff like that.
Hmm, okay. So parameters.
Yeah, setting parameters results in kind of a more focused idea, and also it kind of forces you to be more creative because you're limited already.
So that works that way.
That's why I like David Byrne. I kind of use that personally.
That theory works really well with movies as well.
Yes.
You limit the budget.
Yes.
You must be more creative. You have to find a way to make it work. It also works with what I do graphic design wise. I can use all the colors ever.
But it would look gross.
And I tend to not. Yes, yeah. Because too many colors, too much...
You pay attention to nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's there's like just too much going on visually, exactly. And what I do is just a visual thing, so...
Music's the same thing. You don't want four guitar solos in a row because the person tunes out.
Example, you remember the band Flies?
Yeah.
That song's fine. That song is a feat of production skills. That song is a really well-produced song. However, the rest of that album is like, hey, we've got all these tools that are beck and call. We can totally twist all the knobs and make it do all this sort of stuff. So every song later after that one hit song sounds like too much production.
Yeah.
And it's nasty.
The only people
sludge music
who have gotten away with that are like the Beatles, because they've put little things, but it's never like the focus of the entire song. Like, here's a little weird noise there, you know, and they did do whatever they wanted to and kind of were self-indulgent, but at the same time, those are under like really strong songs. It's not distracting, I guess, the word. You can throw some stuff in there. A good artist knows how to use those boundaries,
right,
to inform them.
With me, limiting the color palette is to my benefit.
Yes.
And a lot of other people do it differently, and they might be able to use all the colors in the world in a way that I won't use them, and thus I can't use them.
Yeah.
Because of my own parameters, and they might succeed in it, where I would probably fail because I'm not exercising those muscles. Those don't appeal to me.
You're not doing Lisa Frank.
No, you got it. So this movie, I actually do find it to be strange, but I don't think that it's the weirdest of the weird. When you introduced it as an alien coming in.
Yeah, I totally get that feeling from it. It's,
and I find that to be completely odd.
Yeah.
I love that. So my odd and strange and is this a weird movie isn't like, is this a weird movie, hate it. No, it's a weird movie, love it.
That's why I like it, yeah.
So that's what I mean by weird. I don't mean like...
It feels more like an ethnology where you come in as an outsider to study someone's culture.
Sure, okay.
It's what anthropology is basically based on.
Okay.
That idea that a human being can be tossed into a kind of alien culture and try their best to present it without any sort of, like you were saying, like not mocking it, not belittling it, but like trying to preserve it in its most pure way to pass it on to other people.
That's what this film feels like.
Yeah, it's
an absolutely. But at the same time, it's got these little tickle moments that I don't know, there's something really adorable about this film.
Yeah, because it's sincere.
That's the word, sincere.
Yeah.
That's it. So would you recommend anybody watch this?
Yeah, everybody should watch this movie, especially if you're from Texas, especially if you like Talking Heads at all. If you like John Goodman.
Yeah, he's great.
See, as I'm checking off all those boxes, that's me already. So I like John Goodman a lot. I'm from Texas. I have to give him props for actually putting in a little bit of the Hispanic culture in there too. And
right.
Mentioning that in the beginning.
Texas comes from the Cadoan word for friend. However, the Caddo were among the first to be wiped out by the early white settlers. A group of Spanish settlers offered the Indians a chance to become slaves. The Indians thought about it, decided it was not a good idea, and killed the Spaniards. Meanwhile, most of the people who now lived here spoke Spanish.
Yeah, that whole history at the beginning was really funny.
Yeah, no,
how
that
he presents it. He's just matter-of-factly presenting it.
Yeah.
But there's a still humor to it, and it doesn't dismiss or diminish or belittle. It's great. But like, what I like about this movie is that every person of any kind of race isn't mentioned as a person of any kind of race.
No.
It's just, this is a person.
Yeah. They're not caricatures.
Yeah, exactly.
And they all kind of mix into the community of the film.
Virgil, Texas.
Yeah, Virgil. Like, they all just kind of fit in.
So it's like everything's kind of organically done.
Yes. It never seems forced in. Nobody seems like the kind of racist caricature for comic relief.
Yeah, not at all.
No, Yeah, it's genuine.
Like, even Tito is a funny character, but he's not, like, Laugh at the Mexican funny character.
Yeah, I feel like this movie was made by someone who came and just hung out here for a year in secret and didn't tell anyone they were here and then just watched.
Yeah.
That's the feeling I get. Like, David Byrne probably lived somewhere or just visited a lot. Who in Texas in the 80s is looking out for David Byrne, right? Especially if you go to these little tiny towns. They're just like, oh, there's a city boy wearing a suit. I love that fact where he mentions, they sell a lot of these suits, but I don't see anybody actually wearing them.
Right.
Because that's another part of Texas, that weird kind of nativism and kind of not, like, being nice to outsiders, but still kind of taking advantage of them, you know, of their idea of Texas.
Okay, yeah.
You know that they come and they expect to see the horses and the cowboys, right? So you kind of play that up and you kind of laugh when they're the ones buying the big hats and the
Right. See, I came here expecting this David Byrne movie,
yeah,
travelogue vision of Texas, and we drove through that. We didn't land there.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to live there, though. I don't think.
I don't know where I would want to
live.
It's
boring. Every time I drive through those towns going to Austin or Houston or something, I'm just like, how do people live here?
Oh, right.
Just logistically, like, there's,
oh, right,
there's one
the store?
Gas station that, yeah, sells, right, your, yeah, food, yeah, and everything.
Oh, that's not what I mean.
That, like, that's what terrifies me.
Yeah. Well, I love this movie. I really do. Glad you watched it with me. I'm glad you like it. So, thank you very much. We'll have to figure out what else you can watch next time.
I know. Nothing's going to check off all those things I like so much. It's rare.
It's rare. But this one did?
Yeah, this one was great.
Awesome. Thank you, Rob.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Goodbye. Monologist. Monologist. Monologist.